Everyone, my name is Carol King and I'm an alcoholic. And before I start, I would like to welcome all the new people that have introduced themselves. I hope to stay. It's pretty important. And I want to tell you that when I first got here, people that were helping me out said, if you can stay sober, many good things will happen to you. I did not believe that, really didn't, because I was such a mess. But I'm here to tell you now that it has happened. I've had many good things happen to me, and I'm a very happy person today. So you've got a lot of good things ahead of you, so please just stay. My home group is the Young at Heart group. I've been there for a long, long time, almost as long as I've been sober. My sobriety date is August the 5th, 1968, and I will have 49 years this year. And it's a miracle. It really is. Thank you. It is a miracle. Very much so. I never would have thunk it way back in those days, I'll tell you. And when people did tell me in the beginning that good things could happen to me, I found that hard to believe because my disease took me to a lot of bad places. I did a lot of terrible things. I did a lot of things to my children. A lot of things happened. So it was very hard for me to believe that my life was going to get much better. So I'll go back to the beginning. Oh, by the way, my first lead, I was sober a year up at the vet's hospital, and I spoke for an hour and a half. I've come a long way, so don't worry. I've gotten way past that. But you know, the people in that room who knew me well, and they had every right to probably leave, I had no clue. I was so nervous. I didn't even look at the clock in front of me. I just kept talking. I'm sort of known for that now, but in those days, it was not a good idea. Okay, let's go back to the beginning. I'm actually from California. That's where my drinking took place. When I was 22, I was married, and I had four children. Busy. I didn't have time to drink then. I was too busy with everything else. And so that's what I did for a while. And after a couple of years, when my kids got a little older, I got a job. And that's when it started. That's when it started. The girls where I worked said, let's go have a drink. And I really didn't drink much at all. And so I did. Went and had a drink. Screwdrivers with the beginning. Not at the end, but at the beginning. And so it only took me 6 years for my disease got me to a very horrible place. I started out as a social drinker. Many of you didn't. Some of you did. But I did. I social drank for a short period of time. But as we know, as time went on, little drink here and there, and next thing you know, I'm drinking frequently, and next thing you know, I'm drinking every day. And now I'm drinking before I go to work. My husband drank before I did and drank more than I did. And I used to watch him fix screwdrivers in the morning when he went to work, and I thought, why not? I was a waitress, and I thought it would probably make me a better waitress. Maybe it did. So now I'm drinking screwdrivers in the morning, and he's saying to me, you know, you're going to be careful. You're going to turn into an alcoholic. And I, you know what I thought to myself? Who are you? This guy was throwing up every day, and I'm not criticizing him. I'm just letting you know that that's where he was. So how could he even say anything to me about what I was doing? I was just having fun. The girls I went out to drink with were having fun. I thought people did that. And I don't even have to go into a long story about it because as time went on, I was drinking more. I was staying out late. I was telling lies to my husband. I didn't want to let him know that I was in a bar till late at night. And so all of those kinds of things started to happen. And sometimes when I did get drunk, I didn't blame it on me. I blamed it on, oh my God, I have four kids. I love them, but they were a job. I had a husband that drank. I didn't like that. And so I blamed it on everything else. And I just thought, well, that's what people do, and that's what I needed to do. No idea at all that there was anything going on. So, after a while, I started fighting with my husband. He started fighting with me. The drinking got worse. Everything started to get bad in my house. We were not getting along. I was staying out late at night. I was getting drunk, and he was getting drunk. So he decided that he needed to leave. And so he came back to Erie, Pennsylvania, where he was born. Took all the money, and here I am in California with these kids, and I didn't know what to do. See, I let him keep me away from my parents. He didn't do it. I allowed it to happen. So I hadn't talked to my parents in quite a while. They lived in California, too. And I was living in Redondo Beach at the time, and there's a bar in every single corner. And so when he left, I wasn't working then because I had got fired from my job. I came in on my day off, drunker than anything, and I was gone the next day. And you know whose fault that was? The guy that owns the restaurant. Not mine. So now I don't know what to do. But I knew every bartender in that whole area. And so I would go into the bar in the morning and I would ask for $2 so I could buy cereal for the kids, that's all it took then, and $1 for me to get into the bar that night. I did that for a while because I needed the money. After a while, even the $2, the bartenders were saying, Carol, we can't do this for you anymore. I called my parents. I had to humble myself. So they brought me back to Ontario, California, and I stayed with them for a little while. And things for me were really getting bad. They really were. My parents had no idea. I used to hide the booze in the closet in the bedroom. My father, even after I sobered up, didn't believe that. He thought my husband was the problem. If I would just have gotten rid of him, I wouldn't have this problem. So anyway, it was time to get an apartment because my parents were cramping my style because I wasn't able to drink the way I wanted to drink. And I really needed to at that time. So I was able to get a job up in a place, if you've never heard of this place, called Cucamonga, California. And they made Cucamonga something wine that had to be the most awful stuff you ever tasted. And so I was able to get a job in a bar. I worked in the kitchen, and then I bartended later in the day, and I had enough money to get an apartment. And that's when things started to get really bad, really bad. So when I was working in this place, sometimes I only had to work till 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and so the bartender would take me home and drop me off. And they would try to get me to drink a little less, and I used to think, "Why? What are you talking about? I'm fine." So every afternoon I got drunk. Later in the day, I would get home and I would pass out. My oldest daughter was 9. She took care of the other kids. I was passed out. And I would wake up about 9 or 10 o'clock at night and get upset because it was too late for me to go out and drink again. And I blamed it all on everybody else. If my husband hadn't done that to me, I wouldn't be like this. And we know that's not how it works. So anyway, I stole a blouse from Kmart. Because where I worked, we were supposed to, it was St. Patrick's Day, and we had to wear something green. So I got drunk, and I went there and stole a blouse. Now, you have to understand, when I was a kid, I did nothing wrong in my life. I was an angel with my mother. I never gave her any kind of problems, so now I'm stealing stuff from Kmart. And they caught me. My mother worked at another place, another department store, and I was afraid she was going to find out. So I had to go to a court hearing later on. After that, things really got bad because I was getting drunk a lot. And I was finding myself waking up in the morning in places I didn't remember being. And I remember when I worked at this bar, there was a little old lady, probably about my age now, sitting at the end. And she was so quiet. And the owner of the bar, I said, "What's with that lady over there?" "Well, she's so nice. She just comes in here and she gets drunk and goes home and she leaves her kids alone while she's here." And I remember saying to myself, I would never do that. I would never do that. And I guess I don't have to tell you that, yes, I did that. There came a time when I thought, I'm just going to go out for a couple of hours, just see my friends. And when I did it one time, it was okay to do it more, and I did it over and over again. Not such a good idea. From there, I was so upset with the world, and I didn't know where my life was going. Bartenders were trying to get me to drink ginger ale or coffee, and I had no idea, I had no clue that my life was going down the drain. It only took 6 years. 6 years. So now I'm working at this place, and I get a call from my husband, you know, that guy that left me. And he says, honey, why don't you come down back to Erie, and we'll start all over. And I said, sure, send me the money. Well, the reason I went was because I was due to go to court over this thing I did when I stole that bus. And I thought, well, this will work out really perfectly. Let me get out of here. And so that's how I ended up in Erie, Pennsylvania. But see, I have a great big feeling that God works in very good ways. Because the only reason I got back here was, some of you know Jim White. Jim White was sponsoring my husband, who was going to AA once in a while. And he was finding out that my husband had a family in California, and I didn't even find this out till probably 10 years ago. He had told me about it. He had said to my husband, do you have family somewhere? Yeah. Where? In California. Well, do you have kids? Uh-huh. Well, if you want me to sponsor you know what, you better get this family back. And that is the only reason he called me, to get me back here. And that's why I believe that really God works in a lot of ways. So I come back here, and we're setting up housekeeping for probably a month. And after that month, he drops me off at home and says, get out of the car. I'm going to live with someone that loves me more than you do. Okay, then. Now, I'm here in Erie. I haven't had much to drink because I didn't have a car and I didn't have any money. And I thought, well, this is really something, isn't it? I ended up getting a job at Frederico's, if any of you remembered where that bar was. And I got friendly with the owner, and I asked him if he would let me borrow a quart of vodka. A quart, let me borrow that, yeah. I went home that night, and I drank half of it. No feeling. You know, remember the time comes when you don't feel anything, you don't feel drunk. And so the next day, I didn't really do much about it. But there came a time when I was letting my husband take the kids. And I said, I don't want you to take those kids to meet your girlfriend. Okay, the deal. Well, I have a daughter who tells everything. Okay, so they went out with Dad one day, and the one daughter came running up the stairs and said, Mom, Daddy took us to meet the girlfriend. And I lost it. I went down the stairs. I said, I asked you not to do that. Now, this is what happened. I knew, even though I hadn't lived here long, I knew the Seed and Burger Club was open on Sundays. I had met a couple of people in AA because I went to a couple of meetings with him just to pacify him. So when that happened, I said to him many things. But then I said, I want you to drop me off at the vet's hospital. My plan was to have somebody from there drop me off downtown because I didn't want to think about things anymore. I wanted to get drunk. I didn't care, and I really didn't care. So he drops me off. I go in the meeting, crying my eyes out. What a mess I was. What a mess. So I went in the coffee room. Joe Quirk, who you would not know because he died many years ago, Jim Clark, some of you probably know him, he died a few years ago. Both of them were at the coffee pot. And the first thing they said to me was, what's the matter, kid? Like, wonder how they knew something was wrong. And they sat with me for 2 hours and we talked about I don't know what. They didn't ask me if I was an alcoholic, nothing. They just talked and talked and talked. And after a couple of hours, they dropped me off at home. And I think Jim Clark said, hey, there's a meeting on Monday up at St. Vincent's. Why don't you come on up? After I got home, when I went to bed and got up the next morning, I paced the floor, and I hope some of you will understand this, and I'm sure you will. I was crying. I was pacing the floor. I didn't know what to do, but the only thing I thought of was, here are these two people that don't know me. Why would they care about what happened to me? And they did. And we all know that here, because that's what we do here. And so I found myself up at St. Vincent's Hospital. Now, that was a treat. The place was packed. Everybody in that place was probably older than I am now or older, except for one guy who's sitting right over here, yeah, Todd. And I thought, well, we're saved. He looked like he was fairly young. He was sober 5 years in, if I'm not mistaken, right? And so I introduced myself, but I didn't believe any of it. I just did it. I just did it. So when I left there, Jim Clark said, why don't you come down to the Wednesday night meeting? I had nothing else to do. I didn't know what to do with myself. I was just a disaster waiting to happen. So I went down there, and that meeting way back then, we only had about 6 or 7 people. They were all guys. There were only 2 or 3 women in the program at all. Nothing. So I didn't have any females sponsoring me. But these guys at the meeting, most of them were only sober as long as I was. There's Twiggy, Posey, Jim Clark was a little bit older. And we helped each other. And that's how we really sponsored each other. And that's how it went for quite a while. So after that, it was about 6 months. No, I take that back. About 3 months, I was sitting in that room and I kept listening. And nobody asked me any questions. I just sat there. Finally, Jim Clark came up to me one day and sat down and said, let's talk. Okay, what do you want to talk about? You have to make a decision. Do you think you're an alcoholic? I said, I don't know. Maybe I'm half an alcoholic. Like being half pregnant? No. So he said, well, you have a choice to make. You can go with us and do what we suggest, and it can all be good for you, or you can go back to that life you had in California. And I did not want to go back to that life in California because I had been sober a little bit of time to know that that was a horrible existence that I had. And I really did know that I belonged in AA. So that was really the beginning of my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. Weird. And so after the meeting was a year old, they said, hey, Carol, why don't you make a cake? Okay, to celebrate the year that we had for the meeting. So I went home and made a cake out of a box with water and a couple of eggs. When I took it out of the oven, it was hard as a rock. And the worst part about it was I took it to the meeting thinking it was going to be okay. My God, I was really a weirdo then. And so they had a backup, and they laughed about it. And we still laugh about it now. I make good cakes now, but and that was not the case then. And so after that, they said, it's time for you to participate. You can wash the cups. Now, there were only 7 people in that room, but that isn't the point. The point is, they were starting to make me feel like I was useful and I was somebody. And it was a thrill for me to just wash those dishes. It made me feel so good. It really did. So now we go forward a little bit longer, and it was probably a little bit over a year, and I'm still sitting at the meeting. And in those days, the floors there were black and white checks. And I was still a wreck most of the time, and I would count them while we're listening to the lead. And then I said to Jim one day, is this all there is? Is this all that's going to happen to me? I'm just going to keep coming to this meeting every week, and then I'm going to grow old and die. He said, why don't you do something? Well, what am I supposed to do? I don't know how to do anything. Want to go to school, maybe? I don't know. Maybe I'll be a teacher. Well, you have to go to Gannon and fill out an application. They won't take me. I didn't think very much of myself. But I filled out the application, and yes, they took me. And when I got the letter, I started to cry. Because I called Jim and said, they sent the wrong person the letter. I'm not good enough. I'm old. But I was okay. And I got my degree in teaching that year. I started to sponsor some people. The first girl that I sponsored committed suicide. She had a problem with always wanting to just get that sick for attention, and then one time she just took too many. And she was the first girl I ever sponsored. And at first I sort of blamed myself, but it didn't take long for me to realize that that's not my job. I'm not able to take care of that. But I loved her, and it was a good experience for me. So anyway, after that, we're working on the steps in between all this, by the way. And when I got to step 4, you know, that one, and Jim kept saying, "How's it going?" "Oh, I'm working on it." No, I wasn't working on it. Every week, "How's it going? Are you working on it?" "Yeah, I'm working on it." Finally, I got disgusted enough. I thought, let's get started with this. So what I did was, on a piece of paper, I can't even believe I did some of this. I started with when I got married and all the way to the present. And I put down things next to it about things I had done in those years. But I didn't want anybody to know how bad I was. So I'd put X's and O's and on. And on. So, but I knew. So when it was over, I took it to Jim. Now, is that the dumbest thing you ever heard? How could he know what was on that paper? He didn't know anything. But he didn't criticize me. He just looked at it and said, "You're fine, okay." Well, I put it away, and I must have been about 10 years later, I got that out. And I took a look at it, and it finally made me realize what all of you, most of you probably know here, that alcoholism is just a symptom of something else. And I found out by reading that page that all of the things and most of the things that I did took place long before I took that first drink. And that was a real eye-opener for me to realize that that's what was happening. So, okay. So now I have a friend of mine that says, "You're going to go get your master's degree." I said, "No, I'm not." I was teaching school. I was very happy in third grade. "Yes, you are. I'm going to help you. We're going to go." I said, "Okay." And I really, so many people helped me to get that degree. It was very difficult for me, but we got through it. And so when it was time to graduate, they said, "Come on, Carol, you're going to wear one of those things." And I, "No, I don't need to do that. I just need the diploma." They were all young people, you know, and I wasn't old then, but they were very young people. And they said, "Come on, we'll have a good time." So I got all dressed up and was sitting in the auditorium, and they're calling everybody up, and I'm just having a good old time. I don't want to cry over this one, but I won't. I'm doing very good until I got up there and got that degree. And all I could think of was what my life had been like back then. And look at me now. I have a master's degree in teaching. And it was just overwhelming. I was just so happy that I went there and thought, just think about all the things that AA has done for me and for all of you. With a lot of help from God, I'm sure. And so all these good things started happening for me. I have to go back to the cake story really quick. Am I behind schedule? No, I'm good. Okay. No hour and a half yet, right? Okay. After I made that cake, I don't know what possessed me, but you know, my kids and I never ate together. We never did anything together. Even after I sobered up, I was busy going to meetings every day, which is what I should have been doing till I got myself straightened out. So I decided we could have a meal together. It was probably better for me, for them. I don't know if they really appreciated it or not. But we were all together making mashed potatoes and meatloaf, and we sat down, and that was the first time my kids and I had a meal together, ever. And I called Jim and said, "Guess what? This is what happened today. Isn't this wonderful?" "Yeah, that's really wonderful. But every mother on your block is doing the same thing every day, Carol." I said, "Okay." And so all of those things started to happen for me. When I was sober a couple of years, I met Kenny, and we got married. And we were married about 7 years, and he died of a massive heart attack. And at that time, I was the delegate to the General Service Conference that year. And through the whole thing going on with him dying, all I could think of through that whole thing was get me there, because I was to go to New York the following week, and that's all I could think of. I called there to tell them that I would be coming, but I was supposed to give a talk, and I wasn't sure I was going to be able to do it. So I asked them, could somebody else read it for me when I get there if I can't do that? Sure. But when I got there, I befriended about six Canadian guys that were there, just as nice as they could be. We had such a good time. We went and had ice cream every night, and I told them what had happened and that I was going to try to get up there and read the speech. And they said, we'll be sitting right in front, Carol. We'll help you on. And so they sat in front and just cheered me on and did all of that, and it was just a wonderful experience. So my kids are good, as kids can be. You know, everybody has problems in their life. I mean, both my parents died. Things have happened to me. My friend Jim Clark died a few years ago, and we were very close. I knew him for 49 years. So a lot of those things happen. But my home group is the best, as far as I'm concerned. Because when things are tough for me there, they are right there for me. When things are good, they're also right there for me. That's the kind of a home group you want. And it's like my home. It really is like my home. There are many things that I forgot to say tonight. However, if you'd have come to my house this morning for coffee, I gave the whole read there, and I thought it was fantastic. I didn't miss a thing. But I guess what I really want to say is I am so happy to be part of this life, to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. And when somebody asks me to lead, maybe people wonder why you still want to do all that. I do it. One of the main reasons is because I am so grateful. I am so grateful that my life is the way it is. And also, when you ask me to speak, I have to go back and think about those days. And you know, sometimes when you're sober quite a while, you might forget. I don't, because when I do this sometimes and I hang around my friends, I can always remember what a miserable life I had because of alcoholism. And then I am so happy that I don't have that anymore. And I'm like I said in the beginning, I have a very, very happy life. So again, all of you new people, you have so much to look forward to. I didn't believe it either when they said, in fact, when Jim said, good things are going to happen to you. My answer to that at that time was, what is it going to be? When is it going to happen, and why? That's typical of me. And he said, well, we'll never know. I guess you'll just have to stick around and find out. And I am so grateful that I did. So thank you very much.